Welcome to the LDN Radio Show, brought to you by the LDN Research Trust. I'm your host, Linda Elsiegood. I have an exciting lineup of guest speakers who are LDN experts in their field. We will be discussing low-dose naltrexone and its many uses in autoimmune diseases, cancers, etc. Thank you for joining us. The Dysanomia Clinic provides in-office phone and video consults to patients with complex disorders worldwide. For more information, visit www.dysautonomiaclinic.com. I'd like to introduce my guest, Jill Brooke, who's a researcher and nutritionist and also a research advisor to the LDN Research Trust. Thank you for joining us today, Jill.
Thank you for having me. Happy New Year.
And Happy New Year to you too. So what have you got to tell us that we can embrace to have a healthier 2020?
Well, my big thing for 2020 is for us to start thinking more about the microbes that live in us and on us. Because I think the research and nutrition world has already done a good job of feeding it into our heads that we need to think about carbohydrates or fat or calories or whatnot. And I think everyone has kind of exhausted that to death, gotten as far as they're going to get feeling better looking at those things. I think what we've really been missing is thinking about the gut microbes. So, you know, we're learning now that there are probably about 100 trillion little bacteria and other kinds of microbes that live in us and on us. Most of those, the biggest colony is in our guts. We also have colonies in our mouths, in our skin, eyes, ears, everywhere, but our guts have the biggest colonies, and these little microbes can do so much for us when we treat them right. You know, I like to think of them as a bit of an army where they can either work for us or against us, and we really ought to be doing more to get them working for us. We already know that they do things like they help us extract nutrients out of the foods that we eat. They're important for some chemical reactions. They play a tremendous role in our immune system. They are responsible for signaling that goes between the brain and the gut. And almost every day you see new headlines about the amazing things that our gut microbes are involved with, especially in the areas of mental health, weight, autoimmunity, allergies, neurological problems. They just have a lot to do with everything. So these little guys just need more attention. There's a lot of easy things we can do to starve the bad microbes and feed the good microbes so that we have these guys working for us. So I thought today what I would do is maybe just go over about like a dozen just little things that we can start doing that helps us to have better microbes, if that sounds good to you, Linda.
Fantastic.
Okay. And, you know, I should say that I realize that probably the audience that listens to this might have a lot of issues or difficulties around eating. And so even if you find one thing that you're able to do, I think it should be you should look at it optimistically, that if you can do one good thing for your gut microbiome, then those gut microbes can do a lot more good things for you. And it might kind of help bootstrap you to a place where, you know, now maybe you're tolerating more foods or you have fewer stomach aches or things like that. So I know that when I mention things that can be done to improve gut health, that there will be a lot of people who say, well, I can't eat this or that, or I can't do that. But my hope would be that if people can find one thing they can do, that that'll get them feeling good enough that then they can maybe try something else. Mm. So with that, I think the number one, maybe easiest thing people can do to improve their gut microbes is to take breaks from eating sometimes. And that's because when we go without eating for 4 or 5 hours, then the intestines are able to do their cleaning wave, where they just do a little bit of house cleaning and they're able to just take care of some business. And at least the research for Americans shows that most of us are eating so many meals and snacks throughout the day that our intestines never get that break. So we don't do the proper cleaning wave. So going without eating for 4 or 5 hours is all it takes to do that. Mm-hmm. I know that some of us with dysautonomia or POTS or IBS, we're encouraged to eat lots of little small meals. And so I realize that this advice goes counter to that. So I think it's worth an experiment for people. And some patients are finding that they can spend a chunk of the day eating lots of small regular meals, but then spending another chunk of the day doing the time-restricted eating, so that at least once a day you get time for that cleaning wave to happen. So that's number one. Mm-hmm. Number two is you can starve a lot of the unfriendly gut microbes by just avoiding sugars, processed sugars, the sugar bombs, the junky foods. And I know everybody already knows they're supposed to be avoiding these things, but there's some intriguing research suggesting that the whole reason that we crave junk food sometimes is not that we ourselves are craving the junk food, but that it's those bad microbes that are craving it. So so that might help some people resist some of those cravings more if they know that it's not actually themselves that want it. It's those nasty little microbes that are going to die if they don't get their fuel in the form of the sugar or the other junk. Along with that goes artificial sweeteners, because we know that the Splenda and the Equal and some of the other artificial sweeteners can really disturb gut bacteria. And in fact, that's the whole reason they figured out that when people switch from regular soda to diet soda, they don't lose weight. And that was a big mystery for a long time, because how could you not lose weight when you remove all that sugar from your diet? And what they learned is that the artificial sweeteners were disturbing the gut microbes and making gut microbes that were making people glucose intolerant and making them more likely to gain weight. So that's kind of a powerful example of how much harm gut microbes can do. They can do the equivalent of, you know, a soda habit.
Wow.
Yeah. The next one that I'd say, unfortunately, I feel like I'm taking away all the fun things, but excess alcohol is also proven to feed some of the bad microbes. But again, you know, I like to think, even if the research hasn't proven yet that alcohol cravings are caused by bad microbes, I like to tell myself they are, because it makes it easier to resist. So that's the things you can do to starve the bad microbes. There's also the other side of the coin. You can eat to feed the good microbes and help them flourish, because it's all competition within the gut, right? So the good and the bad are fighting it out for space and resources. And every time we eat, we are either helping the good ones or the bad ones. And so to help the good ones, all we need to do is eat more colorful plant foods, especially veggies. And what I've found so interesting is that every different kind of plant food appears to feed a different species of good microbes. And the reason this matters is that good health is correlated with having a wider variety of gut microbes. And so you don't want to just have a lot of good ones. You want to have a lot of different species of good ones. Mm-hmm. And so the way to do that is variety of plant foods. And I think a lot of us fall into ruts. I know I'm guilty of it, especially since I live in Alaska half the year where you can't even get that many great vegetables. It's easy to just, you know, eat your broccoli every night and think you've done your job. But to the extent that you're able, if you are, if you can branch out and get more variety, then that helps more different good species to thrive. And so everybody's kind of used to thinking about eating the rainbow, but if you're already eating the rainbow, then you might want to push yourself and try to go next to the next step, which is to also eat every different part of the plant's food. So eating some stems, some leaves, some roots, some stalks, some fruits and seeds, and kind of get in that extra dimension of variety. And I know there's a lot of people out there who can't tolerate a lot of foods, or maybe they can't tolerate a lot of fiber. To the extent that you can tolerate fiber, it is the plant fiber that is pretty much feeding all those good microbes. So so the RDA for fiber in America, you know, they would encourage you to eat 15 to 20 grams a day. But the research is pretty clear that it's good for your gut microbes to eat way more than that if you're able to. And if you're not able to, then, you know, I would encourage people to work with their doctors to figure out why they're not able to and see if that's something that they can work on. I would say I talk to a lot of people who report that they cannot tolerate any high fiber foods, but they're okay with that. They don't really love fruits or vegetables or beans anyways, and so they'll just be happy on the low fiber foods forevermore. But I think in light of this research about how important gut microbes are, and how the good gut microbes really thrive on fiber, I would suggest that it is a priority. If you're not able to tolerate fiber, it is a priority to look into that. Don't just give up on fiber without talking to a doctor and seeing if maybe that's something that you can fix. Because it's all about recruiting those 100 trillion microbes to help you out, and fiber is a big part of doing it.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask a question?
Of course.
Drinking. Okay, so we eliminate the soda with sugar. We eliminate the soda that has artificial sweeteners. We obviously can drink loads of water. Alcohol, as you just said, is not good. What do we have left? Smoothies, fruit juice. Now, we can't drink too much fruit juice either, because fruit is naturally high in sugar. What is it we should be drinking? I mean, tea and coffee, how bad is that for the microbiome?
I have not heard anything bad at all about tea or coffee. And especially green teas and herbal teas and black and red and blue teas, I have only heard positive things about all of those. So I think that's a wonderful way to go. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I think you're right that it does feel like we're giving up everything tasty with the regular soda and the diet soda and the alcohol and the juice. So I would just remind everyone that your taste buds do change. And when you start eating less sweet or drinking less sweet beverages. In the beginning, it's going to be really painful and it's going to be hard and it's, you know, the tea is going to be very bland. But over time, since the taste bud only lives for about 4 weeks and then it dies and a new one grows in, that old desensitized taste bud that was used to soda or fruit juice or whatnot is going to die and a new virgin taste bud is going to grow in that thinks ginger tea is wonderfully sweet or licorice tea or, you know, there's 100 kinds of tea out there that if you do give it a little time, your tastes will change and it will seem more delicious if you can just make it through that first couple weeks where everything tastes bland.
Mm-hmm. And if people wanted to flavor water, what would you add to it?
Yeah, so flavoring water, I think putting fruit in it is a great way to go. You see a lot of, you know, spa waters where you can drop in strawberries or cucumbers or lemon or orange slices. If you need something more, then putting in some 100% fruit juice, I think, is a great way to go. Some of the sweeteners that are non-caloric, but also derived from more natural sources, such as the monk fruit or the erythritol or the stevia, so far, those do not have any terrible findings around them that I'm aware of. My only hesitation about that, though, is that NutraSweet, for example, also had a good run of about 20 or 30 years where the very top researchers swore up and down that it was healthy and fine, there was nothing wrong with it, and it just took that long for us to uncover the big problems that do exist with it, i.e. the gut microbes. And so sometimes I feel like when there's something that seems a little too good to be true, then I just worry. I hesitate to say, go nuts, have as much as you want. There's no research saying there's anything wrong with it. Because that's my least favorite thing that researchers ever say, right? Is that there's no research finding anything wrong with XYZ.
Mm-hmm.
That's very different from saying we have proof that it's safe.
Yes.
So I don't know if I did a good job answering your question.
You did. Yes, you did. Mm-hmm. Sorry, you can carry on now, Jill. Thank you.
You know, maybe one good direction to go, you know, there are some fun fermented drinks, the kombucha tea, and a lot of people are enjoying the flavor of that. It's a little bit fizzy, it's a little bit sweet, and it's a fermented food, so it naturally has beneficial microbes in it. So that puts it in the same category as yogurt or sauerkraut or kimchi. And eating our beneficial microbes or drinking our beneficial microbes is a great way to go. So kombucha would be another drink. And that probably is a good segue into taking supplements for probiotics. And I know that's a really, probiotic supplements are really popular right now, but there's not a lot of research showing that very many of them survive the trip to your colon, which is where you want them to reach, or that they do a lot of good things. There are a few probiotic supplements that do have good science behind them for showing some very specific conditions. And so if people are thinking about taking probiotics, you might want to go out there and, you know, go on PubMed and research your condition and see if any particular probiotic has been shown to help. a lot of people are just assuming that they are good and that more are better. And I think we can't quite trust that yet. And it might be more than just a waste of money if they all die in, you know, from your stomach acid. Mm. There is some research to suggest that, for example, if you have SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, that's where the little bugs, the bacteria from your colon, work their way up into your small intestine. Taking a probiotic on top of that appears to make it worse and cause brain fog in some people and bloating. And there's been a few studies showing that patients in the ICU, for example, who are taking probiotics, they do tend to find some of those same strains of bacteria in their bloodstream, which is suggesting that some of those bacteria are getting into the bloodstream where you wouldn't want them to be. So I feel a lot better about recommending eating things like sauerkraut and kimchi and yogurt more than taking a probiotic supplement, unless you can find studies showing that for your particular issue, there is a specific brand that has been shown to help.
Mm-hmm. I have to say, when I was looking at probiotics, I was absolutely overwhelmed. You could pay an awful lot of money or a little money, and I was trying to work out the different strands, how many trillions or billions of bacteria, and I was trying to make sense of it and work out which was the best value for money. And it wasn't necessarily the most expensive, because sometimes you pay for a brand name, but I just found it so overwhelming. I just wanted somebody to tell me, this is the one you should be taking. But there wasn't anyone to say that. And I think eating it is far better. It's simpler.
Yes. Yes, I think you're right. And it's such a huge industry and there's so many choices. And, you know, honestly, probably the vast majority of them die when they hit your stomach acid. One reason that sauerkraut and kimchi are a better choice is that since those are fermented vegetables, the vegetable fiber serves as kind of a life raft for the beneficial microbes. So they can hang on to that and survive the trip down into your gut. And so, you know, kimchi and sauerkraut is so inexpensive compared to any supplement. And yet it's likely that far more of the beneficial bacteria are actually surviving the trip and getting where they need to be.
Mm-hmm.
That said, I wish that kimchi and sauerkraut tasted better. That's an acquired taste that I'm still working on. But the good news is that even just like one forkful a day is probably giving most people way more beneficial bacteria that survive the trip to their gut than most supplements.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah. Let's see. I have a couple more things people can do for their gut microbes. One is just to chew food more thoroughly so that the gut doesn't need to deal with large undigested chunks of food. Another one, I know these ones sound so trite, but managing stress and getting enough sleep can help your gut microbes. There's some pretty fascinating research showing that stress, sleep deprivation, and even pain can change your gut microbes. And I don't know how that happens. I'm looking forward to, you know, the researchers learning more about that. But it's a good reminder that, you know, taking the time to do your best on those things makes a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Getting adequate vitamin D and omega-3 fatty acids Oh, and exercise. It turns out that exercise can affect gut microbes. So it almost starts to seem like these guys, these little microbes, are important and connected to every other good health habit that we would have. So I think there's still so much to learn about them, but there's no doubt that keeping them in mind can serve as a good experiment for anybody who's trying to feel better. Oh, you know what? And I forgot an important one also to mention, which is avoiding unnecessary antibiotics or preservatives. And I think sometimes we forget that when we use preservatives or antibiotics, mouthwash or antiseptic soap, that those things, we intend for them to kill some bad bacteria, but they also affect the bacteria that we want and need. So being more careful about using those things is also a big step. And unfortunately, that kind of ties into the whole, at least in America, the conventional way to raise most animals is with ridiculous amounts of antibiotics. And so when we think we're eating clean by having a chicken breast, for example, we have to remember that if it was conventionally raised in factory farms, then it is full of antibiotics, and our gut microbes are going to respond to that also. And so cutting back on that stuff, or upgrading to higher quality meats that haven't been factory farmed, can also make a big difference.
You talked about,
so that's everything I got.
Okay, you talked about preservatives there, Jill. Unless food is fresh, it's going to have some kind of preservatives with it, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And unfortunately, they are finding that even just a preservative, there's all kinds of preservatives. There's the chemical and synthetic ones that are not very natural. And we expect that those affect our gut microbes. But even some that seem more natural, like high amounts of salt, they are finding that a very high salt diet can have a negative effect on the gut microbes. And, for example, result in more signs of autoimmunity. So I think you're right that the more we can stick to fresh foods, the more we can help the friendly microbes win out over the bad ones.
Mm. Mm-hmm. My husband the other week, I wanted some lettuce, and it was on offer in a, not as a lettuce, it was in a bag. It was pre-washed and ready to eat. And it tasted of you could taste there were some preservatives or something with it. It didn't taste like lettuce. It had a taste to it. It was horrible. I ended up throwing it away. But if you think, if they have taken a lettuce and put it in a bag and it's actually been broken off, they've got to stop it from going brown or whatever. And the only way they can do that is by putting some form of preservative on it, I would have thought.
Yes, I think you're right. And I think that there are some labeling, I would call them loopholes, that allow the inside of packaging to contain some chemicals that don't get listed on the ingredient list of the food.
Mm.
And so it's very difficult. The average Western diet these days is so full of sugar and preservatives and chemicals that in order to buck that system and to eat fresh, it can sometimes feel like you have this very radical lifestyle. Just trying to eat real food. And I think that's gradually changing. I think frozen foods can come to the rescue and be a way to, have fresh things available that didn't necessarily have chemicals. But I really think this is a big challenge of our time. And I think that those of us, I'm an autoimmune patient myself also. And I think that we are kind of the canaries in the coal mine as our food supply and environment gets less and less natural. And it becomes a pretty big challenge to find fresh, whole, real food. But all of the research surrounding the microbiome suggests that if we can do that, we will be pretty well rewarded. So I would just add that if anybody out there is thinking of doing an experiment where you incorporate a few of these things, you don't have to wait a super long time for your microbiome to change. There's research suggesting that in just 5 days, you can have a pretty radically different gut microbiome. So hopefully that's encouraging to anybody who wants to try and experiment with these things.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've come to the end of the show, Jill, and I'd like to thank you very much for all the information you've given us. Would it be possible for you to write a simple fact sheet to go with this interview?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
And I think that would be really helpful for people to be able to take away and read it after they've listened to the program. I think that would be really helpful. I know you're a very busy lady, but if you get time, that would be amazing.
I would be happy to. Yes, indeed.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, and we'll speak to you again later in the year.
Okay. Thanks, Linda. Take care.
The Dysanomia Clinic provides in-office phone and video consults to patients with complex disorders worldwide. For more information, visit www.dysautonomiaclinic.com. Any questions or comments you may have, please email me, Linda, Linda, at ldnrt.org. I look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for joining us today. We really appreciated your company. Until next time, stay safe and keep well.